I'm Brian McCreath from WCRB. I'm at Tanglewood at the Kuzovitsky Music Shed with Dima Slobodeniuk. And you're here for the very first time at Tanglewood, leading the Boston Symphony in a pretty terrific program of Russian, mostly Russian music, but even the one piece that's not is pretty close to being Russian. So thanks for taking a few minutes to talk with me today, Dima. I appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'm really thrilled to be here.
So I know a little bit about your background just from looking into things. You were born in Moscow, but you moved to Finland when you were 16. That really intrigued me. I was wondering if that was meant simply as you left Moscow to study in Finland, or were there other reasons that took you to Finland?
Well, study is one reason, but the whole family moved. So my father got job in Finland, and well, the kind of the prime trigger for this was his will of, well, just to see other other places, because he spent his life in Moscow, and obviously at that time he got a little bit fed up with the whole system. And also, well, he was a viola player, just like my grandfather, in Moscow Philharmonic, and they actually sat on the same stand, so I was kind of cooking in that soup from very very early age.
Yeah.
And at some point he started doing more organizational stuff, and after that he felt the need to go back to playing, and this is how it happened. You know, he got the place in the orchestra in Finland, and this is how he got back to playing and changed the landscape.
I see.
Just like all of us.
Okay, fantastic. Wow, I did not realize that there's such deep family history with orchestral playing. So this has been around you for your entire life.
Yes.
Did your roots in Russia contribute to the choices of music on this program?
Yes and no. I think some of the pieces in the program, they already were programmed when I heard about this opportunity, and I don't actually remember which way we agreed and what was first and what came after, but it definitely represents part of my identity.
Yeah.
What's happening here.
Yeah, no doubt. So the Prokofiev Fifth Symphony, there's a pretty easy way to think of it as a wartime symphony associated with World War II, and it's sort of the trajectory of the music and the history of its writing and everything. Is that a little too easy, though? Is that how it's thought of in Russia? Is it always considered a wartime symphony by Prokofiev?
I'm not sure how it is considered in Russia right now. Well, with this particular symphony, I absolutely refuse to connect it with anything of a social or political aspect.
Oh, great. Tell me more about that.
I take it as a pure piece of art, which each person can interpret it with you know, the way he or she feels it. What Prokofiev brings in this symphony is so much more than what can be described by connecting it with war or peace or political situation. You know, what is, you know, it's a tradition to always talk about politics when you talk about Shostakovich. Obviously, there is a very, very good reason for that. But it's just a part of the, it's only an iceberg, you know, the top of the iceberg. So the music itself is so much more important. You cannot explain everything with political situation around. Though, of course, there is, you know, a clear influence. For me, this symphony is a fairy tale. It takes you, perhaps that's the way you can connect it to the wartime. It takes you somewhere else, from the reality, from today. It takes you places where you've never been before. And every time I perform this symphony, it takes me different places. And it's unbelievable, because it's all about the, you know, the symbiosis between myself and the orchestra, what the orchestra is kind of offering and not offering, and what we, you know, can find in common. So it's a great process. So for me, this symphony, yeah, it's a fantasy world.
And so let's dig into that a little bit with this particular orchestra. Your first time now with the Boston Symphony, and this piece has a really rich history with the BSO. But what is it that you experience on the podium when you're conducting Prokofiev Fifth with the BSO?
Oh, they offer so much attitude towards this music, a beautiful attitude which is based on the experience and the knowledge of the style, color, phrasing, everything. It's incredible to be able to shape it. That's my kind of my primary kind of objective, is that not just to, you know, the beat the music, but to shape it and to steer it to certain directions I want. But the material is incredible. I'm so lucky.
Yeah. So the Wieniawski Second Violin Concerto is a really straight-ahead piece written for the composer himself, who is one of the greatest violinists. What do you think, though, makes this piece so much more successful than a lot of the other sort of more run-of-the-mill violin concertos of that time that were really kind of show pieces? What makes this piece really successful?
I think it's very honest. It's not trying to be anything it is not. And I think that goes to, you know, for any piece of music. It's a showpiece, yes, but in a very good sense of that word. So it has beautiful orchestration, very good harmonies. And I mean, you know, to make a good piece of music, you know, to simplify it extremely, you don't need much. You need a very good form so that the piece is not leaking, you know? So it's like, you know, as one. And you need good orchestration and fantasy on the, you know, on the harmonic side. That's all. And as he was violinist himself, obviously the instrumental aspect of it is beautifully written. He has two concertos. The first one is extremely hard and less interesting musically, at least for me. I had to play it when I was studying, and obviously this one too. And but they're great pieces of music. I mean, this one especially for me.
Yeah. Have you worked with Josh Bell before?
Yeah, we've worked. Yes, I think the last time we worked, we did Glazunov concerto.
Yeah. As mentioned before, this is your first time to Tanglewood, but you have some conducting history in one of the real, I think of it almost like a Garden of Eden with conducting, which is Finland. You study with some of the great teachers in Finland that have produced so many great conductors. Was Tanglewood and the BSO something of a presence in your mind even back then, as a faraway place that you wanted to sort of experience at some point, or is this a little bit all kind of new to you?
Everything is new, but while you study, you always hear about Tanglewood, because for student, what happens in Tanglewood is a unique, and now I get to witness it, you know, with my own eyes. So yeah, I mean, I always wanted to go to come here, but this came, I mean, whenever it comes as a surprise, and I take it as a, you know, as a gift. But I'm so happy, because the atmosphere here actually is so encouraging and motivating, because there are only people here who really want to be here and who are motivated in whatever they do. And I feel the same on stage with BSO. And that attitude is the best thing what can happen to music making.
Yeah, I just witnessed you talking to a student that you apparently got to know at the Verbier Festival.
Yes.
And now he's a TMC student here. So you've been very involved with younger musicians, and I know you have an education initiative. And tell me a little bit more about like what drives you with helping younger musicians on in their craft.
I like to work with young musicians and to pass on, though I mean, I'm not that much kind of further from them. It's not like, you know, an old man with a 1 meter white beard turns back and gives for a few
yes, you're still vigorous and in the prime of your life. That's
so
true.
I'm still kind of close to them, but yeah, a little bit further, so that the experience which I got during this, well, let's say 20 years of conducting, is already something I can pass on. And I've arranged a conducting masterclass with my orchestra in Galicia, Spain, 2 years ago, and now we're doing it again, and it's extremely rewarding. And by default, I didn't want to teach. I thought that I'll do that when I'm 60. But when young people ask questions and you answer, and you realize that your answer perhaps planted a seed, you know, and maybe even got this seed to blossom or to grow even 1 centimeter high something, then you start thinking that, yeah, maybe I can keep answering the questions. And I think answering the questions is actually the best way to teach, because you don't want to give advices which you are not asked for. I think this is the generally in life very good, you know, don't give advices to people who didn't ask for any advice. And when I was studying in Helsinki, my teacher, Jorma Panula, he never said anything unless you asked. And then some people got really, you know, disturbed by that. I mean, why doesn't he say anything? Well, it's because you have nothing to ask. It's only when you have a question, it means that you have actively thought about something and it came from inside and you really, you know what you're going for. But if you get a ready answer, that answer doesn't necessarily answer your question. So that's my kind of...
That's terrific. Simple, I love that.
Simple rule. Yeah.
Yeah, terrific. Well, Dima Slobodaniuk, thank you so much for a few minutes of your time. Welcome to Tanglewood. It's really great to have you here. Thanks
again. Thank you. My pleasure. Thanks a lot.